Welcome to part two in the series in Azure SQL Data Warehouse. In this session, we're going to look at databases and tables. My name's Chris Tess O'Neill. I work in the analytics and data science team as a features engineer. Let's start off with the agenda. So the agenda is databases to begin with, then we'll look at tables. And from there, we'll look at indexes, statistics, and partitions. So if you're a SQL Server professional and work with SQL Server on a regular basis, a lot of this will be familiar to you already. There's a lot of T-SQL syntax slides, which they're not designed to blind you with science. They're quite literally there to help you feel more comfortable with doing this and realizing that actually, with a strong background or even a reasonable background in T-SQL, you should be able to create many of the objects that we see here. There are slight variations that are specific to Azure SQL Data Warehouse, and I'll call them out. So let's have a look at databases first. Basically, when you create a database, you use the create database statement, and it's no different for Azure SQL Data Warehouse. Here we can define the database name, and optionally we can define a collation. There's three options of consideration. Firstly, the max size, which here can be expressed as gigabytes, and there's various sizes there. The addition is important. You need to specify the addition of data warehouse, and the service objective relates back to data warehouse units. We discuss this in part one of this series. Now we can also alter the database as well. So from there we can alter the database name by using the modify name. We can modify addition options such as the max size and change the size of the database, or we can modify and change the service objective from one data warehouse unit to another. Now it's really important to mention at this point that when it comes to Azure SQL Data Warehouse, you can't do cross-database queries. So in a scenario in your data warehousing where you may have cross-database queries, maybe in an on-prem scenario, you have to think about a design that accounts for that by using schemas. So a schema is a logical holder of objects, SQL Server objects, and they can be secured as well. But they can also provide a namespace for objects. Now, because we can't do cross-database queries, perhaps when you are bringing in information from different systems, ordinarily a lot of BI professionals would possibly put them in their own landing areas that may be databases and then pull it together into a staging area. Well, perhaps you might want to consider using schemas instead. So you're landing tables in a schema that refers to the name of the data source. So the way we can get around the limitation of not being able to do cross database queries is actually to place those objects in separate schemas so that all the objects are within the same database, but they are separated by a schema name itself. The code that you use is create schema and define a schema name, no different from on-prem SQL Server. And like on-prem SQL Server, we can define authorization and define a principal that is the owner of that schema, and principals can own other schemas as well. So just bear that in mind. So with the database created, what we're going to do is show you an example of this. Now, in the previous presentation, what we did is we created a SQL Server instance to host an Azure Data Warehouse database. So what I'm going to do is I am going to log on to the Azure portal. So we're in the portal, and the first thing we're going to do is just go to our resource groups. And in part one of these sessions, I created a couple of resource groups. They begin with CTO, and within the CTO IDS PrepRG, I created a SQL Server instance that could host our Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So I'm clicking on that now. And what I'm going to do, time has passed since I recorded the first video. I'm just going to check that my IP address is in the firewall so that I can use various clients to connect up to that particular instance. So if I go to the firewall, What we'll see is the firewall blade appearing, which will give me a list of the IP addresses that are in there. 861-842-34168. Perfect, so that's fine. So the other thing to be mindful of as well, oops, is that we want to get the fully qualified domain name of this SQL Server instance. And this will be used to connect up through various client tools. So if I use the properties blade here, what this will do is it will bring up the server name as a fully qualified domain name. Oops. So I'll copy that. And what I'm then do is open up Visual Studio. And then I'm going to open up a Visual Studio solution. Okay, so the solution is opened up. It's got a package in there at the moment with an error, but I'm going to show you that in another video. So what we're going to do is essentially make use of what is a create database statement. And as you can see from this create database statement, we have a database called EquityDB. We're setting a collation, and then we're defining an addition as data warehouse, the service objective as DW100, and the max size as 1024 gigabytes. So what we can do is basically, first of all, we'll connect up to the instance, and this is where the fully qualified domain name becomes important. So it's connected up to my local project. So I'm gonna change that connection to connect up to the instance of SQL Server that we created earlier. Now, in part one, that was using SQL authentication where we had an account and a password. And if I click on connect, perfect, you can see at the bottom down here that we have the correct server. Now, this is focused in at the moment in the master database of that instance, so we still have that. So what we can do is highlight this code, and then basically we will execute. And what we've got here is the query that's currently executing. There are a number of dynamic management views that you could actually use to see how that is progressing. So for example, in here, I've got create database, and we'll just open up this, and we will connect up . So now we're connected to this instance. What we're getting is what is known as the operation status on the actual data warehouse itself. So it's giving us the database name, the operation that it's doing. Now what I'll do is I'll run this now. And in a moment, what that will do is it will bring results back saying, hey, we've got a database called EquityDB. It's a create database operation. It's currently in progress. It's telling us what time it started and when it was last modified and the duration in seconds. And it looks like it's updating in seconds there. So we can basically get an idea of the status of a database and how it's progressing. Just run it again and it's gone to 60 seconds now, whereas before it was 0 seconds. Again, here, if I run this example, it's giving me the name of the server, the addition, and the service objective. But notice we've got a where clause here around data warehouse, so it's just limiting it to that. Let's execute that. And as you can see, this is creating the EquityDB. It's a data warehouse edition with DW100, which is what we created in our initial script. and then one final check of the first query, execute that, still in progress, 120 seconds. It normally takes about 160 to 180, so that isn't surprising. We can confirm this back here as the query is executing there. So I expect within less than a minute that this should complete itself, but we shall wait for the DMV to tell us. Okay, so the database, EquityDB, completed, and it took 143 seconds. That's great. So what we'll do is minimize Visual Studio, close the instance, go back into it. This will bring up the SQL instance dashboard, where now it should report one database, which is the EquityDB. Great. So that's how we can create a database. Let's move on to tables. And within tables, we're going to cover a number of areas. So firstly, you know, why do we distribute data? So in part one of this series, we talked about the fact that Azure SQL Data Warehouse is indeed a massively parallel processing system. And what that is rather than having your traditional on-prem servers where that's a symmetrical multiprocessing system where essentially the memory and the CPU and the disk share the same motherboard, what we have here is different servers that are finely tuned that will divide a big query into little queries, execute them on those various nodes, and then basically they've only got a small part of a bigger query to solve. So this leads to improved performance. So we distribute data to take that divide and conquer approach to improve the performance. As you would expect, if you're able to evenly spread that data, then that leads to even use of the resources within the Azure SQL Data Warehouse itself. So you need to understand something that's a little bit different with Azure SQL Data Warehouse compared to on-prem SQL servers, and that is referred to as table geometries. So if you're familiar with creating a table structure, essentially you'll use the create table statement, define the columns, names, and the data types, and so forth. Well, here there's a very important clause called distribution, and this determines how the data will be distributed around the various nodes within the Azure SQL Data Warehouse. We have two options. We've got round robin. Round robin will evenly spread the records across all the nodes and all the distributions within an Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So basically what you get here is an even spread, but you don't know exactly which data is on which node. A hash distribution is where the value of a single column will get hash to define a distribution number, which therefore defines in which distribution those records will get inserted based on that hash. So you've got to really think carefully if you're using hash, what column you should put that on. So for example, you know, putting it on a gender column could lead to uneven distribution. Likewise, if you've got a table with a million records and 98% of those records have a city value of Manchester and you put a hash on that, then that can basically cause uneven distribution. But if you choose a column that's relatively selective, you should basically be able to get a reasonable spread of data across all your available distributions, but also have the situation where the control node of the Azure SQL Data Warehouse is aware of where those values are stored. So it can really help with range queries and so forth. So table geometries are perhaps the most important part that you need to be aware of when it comes to tables in Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So here is an example of a create table statement. Here we've got a table called my table. And we're not worried about the column definitions. The important aspect of this slide is quite frankly the with distribution clause, because what that is defining there is whether or not we use round robin or a hash. Notice with a hash, we define a column with it. So do you hash or do you round robin? Well, you know, the guidance for this is you should use hash distribution for factor detail tables if you have a common distribution key which is used in a multi-distribution table join. So if you kind of think about it from a Kimball model with a star schema and your fact table has a join to your dimension tables, then having a hash on the fact tables and those relevant columns help. The other time to use a hash is if you're getting scenarios where you're getting a full table scan and it's just too slow, because there's what a hash will do is it will organize the data into distribution so that then when a query comes through, it knows where in the nodes to look. So when should you use round robin? You should use it when multiple foreign keys are used, like joins. So again, if you think of the star schema, you find that the dimension tables will benefit from round robin. Or another good example is when you do an initial load of data. So you haven't got to the final data warehouse. You might be, if you will, staging data. So what you'll do is you'll just use round robin to do that initial load, so you get an even spread of that data, and then you'll go on to do downstream work to load it into the data warehouse itself. There is something called replication tables, which will be, which isn't a feature in Azure SQL Data Warehouse at the moment. I know that it's on the product group's roadmap. So at the moment, in the absence of that, what you need to do is consider using round robin as well. So you need to remember, data movement will most likely be involved in a multi-distributed table join if one of the tables is a round robin distribution, and we discuss data movement in another video later on. So here is the create table command. You've got the database name, the schema name, and the table name. You then define a column name and a data type. You can optionally define a collation, nullability, constraints. There are limitations on the kind of constraints that you can use, but we'll look at that later on. And you can define a default with a constant expression. And then after that, you use the with table options. And the with table options we'll go into in a moment. But I just want to make you aware that you can also create temporary tables as well by prefixing it with a single hash. So fundamentally, this syntax is the same. The only difference is that you've got a single hash before the table name. The with options, well, basically, we've got three options. We can define indexes, which can either be a custom column stored index, a clustered index. We could use a non-clustered index, but there are reasons to be cautious about that, which we'll discuss later on in this video. You don't need an index at all, in which case it will become a heap. And a heap is essentially a table without a clustered index. The second option is to define a distribution. We've just discussed the difference between hash and round robin. And you can also define a partition. And we're going to cover all of these three areas. We've covered distribution already, but we're going to look at indexes and partitions in more depth later on in this video. So here's an example of a create table, my table. We've got a concord ID, which is an integer if not null. We've got last name with a varchar 20, and we've got zip code of varchar 6. Notice there's no distribution clause defined here. If you were to create a table without the distribution clause, it always defaults to round robin. So please be mindful of that should you be troubleshooting any environments in Azure SQL Data Warehouse. There are limitations to creating a table. There's 2 billion tables per database, up to 1024 columns per table. The number of rows is only limited by the available storage, and the maximum bytes per row is 8,060 bytes, which is a typical SQL Server limitation. There are limitations on data types as well, so most scalar data types are supported. You'll find the main exceptions are kind of blob data types like text, XML, SQL variant, timestamp, system and common language runtimes, UDTs. Identity columns and primary keys and foreign key constraints are not supported. And be mindful that this is constantly changing and they are on the roadmap. So they're going to watch out for changes in this area soon. So although today I'm saying that these features are not available, that doesn't mean to say that they will not be available in the near future. Collations are fully supported, and they are available on the column level as well. There is a default, as you can see on the screen. So as we mentioned with constraints, the only constraint that is supported at the moment is a default constraint, and these can be defined in a create table and an alter table, but it has to be a literal value or a constant. At the moment, primary keys and unique indexes are not supported, and foreign constraints are not supported as well. But as I mentioned before, these are on the roadmap and could change at any time. With the alter table command, we have the ability to modify, add and drop columns. The columns that can't be modified or dropped are columns that partake in as a distribution column, are the part of an index, either a partition column. But there are techniques that we can use that we look at on another video where we may have to recreate a table based on an old table because we want to change the distribution column. We want to create the a different index or a partition. We've also got the ability to perform partition management where we can rebuild all the specified partitions, and we also have the capability to support split, merge and switch operations in partitioning functions as well. So that gives us a lot of scope when it comes to loading. So here is the syntax for alter table. Again, very similar to what you get on-prem. You can define the table name, then you can go into alter column with the type, the collation, the nullability. We can add column definitions, column constraints, drop columns and constraints. And then we can rebuild partitions either based on partition number or all of them. We can split and merge partitions based on boundaries and switch partitions as well. Column definitions can change in terms of the type, a constraint, or nullability. And there's also support with truncate table, which works with distribution tables, whether they're permanent or temporary tables, but you can't use the truncate table with explained or within a user-defined transaction. So how do we create tables? Well, what we're going to do this time is open up Management Studio. Now, I do most of my work in Visual Studio, and I recommend that you actually use Visual Studio when creating all the objects within Azure SQL Data Warehouse. But a very common question I get asked, and I get asked this from a lot of DBAs, is, hey, can I use Management Studio? So what I'm going to show you here is that I can actually connect up to Management Studio. I'm just typing in the password. And oops, which means I've got the password wrong. So let me put that in. So we're connecting to the instance that we just created in part. And as you can see here, here is the Equity database with no tables at all. Now the thing to bear in mind is whilst there's things that you can do in SQL Server Management Studio, there's not full compatibility yet with Management Studio. But as I say, watch this space for any updates that are going along. So what I could do is right-click the Equity database, do a new query, and that will create a new query, a file. And you'll notice that for Azure SQL Data Warehouse, there's certain settings that need to be set in order to be connected. But I'm only going to do it for this session only. So ordinarily, if I basically look at creating tables here, ordinarily I would run this script from within Visual Studio, but because I get a common question about could I do that kind of activity in Management Studio, what I'm going to do is paste that code in Management Studio. Basically I've got three tables, yeah? The first table is called Business Hierarchies, and there's Book ID, Division, Cluster, Deskbook, Volker, Region. Think of that as just a hierarchical structure of information, breaking down data into hierarchies. Notice there's a clustered column store index on this, and I'm using the distribution of round robin. So if I highlight that code and execute the code, the command is completed successfully. We have the very familiar dates dimension table, you know, broken is variations of a date. And like the business hierarchies table here, we're using round robin with a custom column stored index. If I execute that, this completes successfully. And then finally, we've got what is the equivalent of a fact table. Equity time series data with date, book ID, profit and loss for lore. And we've got a custom column stored index with a hash of P&L. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to execute this query, and that command completes successfully. So if I refresh the tables here, we basically get the three tables that we've just created. Notice the tables with round robin have a little yellow diagonal stripe going across those table icons, whereas with hash, we kind of have that table split. So that's how you can view it visually. And like SQL Server Management Studio, you can right click and then select top 1000 rows. And this is really just to confirm that there is no data in those tables at the moment. So what about indexes? Well, the indexing options are, you can have no index at all, in which case you've got a heap. But Azure SQL Data Warehouse does take advantage of the column store technology that was born out of on-prem SQL Server. And we can make use of the traditional indexes as well, cluster indexes as an example. So cluster column store indexes is a technology that was introduced in SQL Server 2014. And the design for data warehouse type queries. Column store itself came with 2012, but it was a read-only operation, and it's evolved in SQL Server into a number, into what we got custom column store. And this is being used in Azure SQL Data Warehouse, and it is optimized for data warehouse type queries. So what it does, it enables queries to be isolated more efficiently over the column compared to what you would have with the traditional B-tree structures that you would have with cluster indexes. We basically get a higher compression ratio due to the structure of the custom column store index. So page compression is typically 2.5 to 3.5 greater. Column store is about 5 to 15 times, depending on the data that you're using. So basically, we get higher usage of storage and a greater return on investment. We get new batch mode processing within that, which gives lower CPU utilization with the same number of rows. And it can support existing data warehouse functionality as well, such as partition, switching, splitting, and merging. So data manipulation language is supported in custom column store. And it does this because basically we've got what's called a delta store. And what that basically means is that inserts are added to the delta store first. And then when approximately 1 million rows are hitting that background, the contents of the delta store are then placed within the column store itself. Deletes from the column store are logical, so they're not physically removed until a rebuild operation is done. And an update is a combination of an insert and a delete. So fundamentally, you'll get an insert occurring in the delta store, a logical delete occurring in the column store, and then with a 1 million change in the delta store, they get placed in the column store, and with a rebuild, the logical deletes are physically removed. So converting a delta store to column store can be done with a reorganize, and it's an online operation as well. We've got support for add, drop, and alter column as well, and partition switching is done here. So cluster indexes versus custom column store index versus heap. You know, which one do you go through? Well, you know, heap tables are really good for inserts. So for initial loads with a table that's got round robin as its distribution, heap tables can work really well. So don't rule them out completely. But really, you know, when it comes to the final data warehouse, you're going to angle for clustered column store indexing in the first instance, simply because they offer the highest compression and they are actually optimized for data warehouse workloads. Clustered indexes, they can introduce a sort step in table load. So it's slower than a heap, but it could organize your data. But it does require periodic maintenance as you get fragmentation, but this is done through a create table, a selector, a CTAS statement that we talk about in another video. So really, I guess in summary, what you're looking at is for an initial load where you're not getting to the final data warehouse, heat tables work well. For the final data warehouse, particularly with fact tables, custom column store indexes work well. But if you've got intermediary steps between that, clustered indexes can support the sort step part of there. Non-clustered indexes, be wary. They become fragmented with data manipulation language, so you need the ultra index to defrag that. It can affect the performance of DML operations. The reason for that, if you're familiar with B-tree structures, is that not only are you adjusting the heap of the data in the clustered index, you're also having to modify the non-clustered index as well. And because the non-clustered index has a separate B-tree, you're effectively taking up more disk space. So really, you've got to use this judiciously, and it's kind of a last resort when concurrency is really important. So we'll talk about statistics now. Every indexing object that you create will create a statistics object. So what are statistics? Well, they are database objects, and fundamentally, they contain statistical information about the distribution of values within a column. So there's a histogram of information that tells it about the distribution of data, which can then lead to the selectivity of data and the density of data. Now, be aware that multi-column statistics can also be generated. And this is where the density information becomes really, really important, because it provides the correlation of values between those columns itself. So statistics are really important because it provides the map of where the data is, essentially, that Azure SQL Data Warehouse can use to edit retrieve data in a performant manner. Now, there's something to be mindful with statistics on the compute node and the control node. The statistics on the compute node, well, basically, there's an automatic statistics setting on the compute node, and it's done through standard SQL Server sampling. But the statistics on the control node, whilst there are statistics there, they're not updated manually. And that's really important, because the control node is what takes the initial hit of the application making a query request. So when a query request is made from a client application, it goes to the control node first. Now, there is a request made by many of our customers to change this, and I know that it's on the roadmap. So even though I'm saying today that statistics are not updated automatically, watch out for any changes in the future. Multi-column statistics. If your joins are on multiple columns, multi-column statistics helps avoid what we call nested loop operations in your execution plans. So, for example, if you've got a long-running query step that has a multi-column join key, and you've got lots of reads, or you've got an estimation plan that's showing a nested loop for a very small number of rows, or you had an actual query that had millions of rows running through a nested loop operation, well, you might want to consider using multi-column statistics that will provide that further information, such as the density information that enables the Azure SQL Data Warehouse to come up with a more optimized plan. The statistics syntax, should you need to create any, is create statistics, define a statistic name. You've got the on clause, where you define the table on which it's on, and then you define the column. Now, one of the things that we can take advantage of are filtered statistics, and this is where we can use a where clause within the create statistics statement to restrict or the range of data over which the statistics being created. We can do this in indexes as well. So with a create index statement, we can use the where clause. And this can be rather beneficial. If you've got a situation where you've got, you know, years worth of data, let's say 10 years worth of data, then you may come to the conclusion where, well, you know what, 80% of our queries are going towards 20% of the data, which is the last 2 years' worth of data as a crude example. So what we might do is create statistics and create indexes with a where clause that restricts it over the last 2 years, and that can basically reduce the surface area over which the index and the statistics are based, which means you get more accurate information about the distribution and density and selectivity of data in there, which can inform the query optimizer more fully of what data is where, which means you get better plans, so to speak. So don't rule out filtered statistics and filtered indexes to help improve performance as well. The best practices for statistics is, we now know that there's two levels of statistics. There's statistics on the compute nodes and the statistics on the control node. And at the control node level, the statistics are not maintained or created automatically. So the goal is to update statistics for best cost-based optimization. Now, if you drop and rebuild an index, that's going to refresh the statistics for you. But in an initial load, you're going to have to create statistics straight after that load because it's not done automatically for you. This could change in the future, but at the moment that's not the case. So what's the solution? Well, you could create statistics for all columns used in joins, group by, and where. That's smart, it's targeted. If you want to be lazy, you could just do statistics for all columns in all tables. So that's the kind of taking a hammer to crack a nut approach. But of course, the more statistics you create, the more database objects you have, the more it's going to search. That can actually have implied overhead. So for me, always go for option one first, unless you've got scenarios where it's not feasible to do that. And then we move on to partitioning. And with partitioning, we've got to talk about how that is different from distribution. Now, we know that the data within an Azure SQL data warehouse is already spread. You've created your SQL data warehouse, you've created a database, and within that database, you've defined a service objective, otherwise known as data warehouse units, either from 100 to 6,000, and that determines the number of nodes that you will have in your Azure SQL data warehouse. We know we're always going to get 60 distributions, and we know with DW100 we get one node, so there'd be 60 distributions on a node. But if we went up to DWU300, we would have 60 distributions spread across three nodes, so that's 20 distributions per node. And then through the create table statement using round robin, we will get an even distribution across all the distributions across the available nodes. So we're already segmenting data by distributions already. So what does partitioning add? Well, partitioning adds, if you will, a horizontal separation of the data based on what's known as a partition function. So this enables operational efficiency when we're adding, loading, dropping, or switching data between partitions. In short, partitions are really good for fast loading of unused partition and then switching it after an initial load. And the reason we do that is because partition switching doesn't physically move the data, it's a metadata switch. So whilst it gives the appearance that data's actually being moved, it's not. Metadata in that partition is being switched to give the appearance that data's been moved. So partitioning is really good for maintaining data or indeed switching data very, very quickly. So the partition table usage, it's the same rules and guidelines as a standard on-prem SQL server. So you use partition switching for large inserts, updates, and deletes. And you can use metadata queries to explore the partition, such as the number of partitions you have, the boundary values you have, and what the partitioning column names are. So partition table management provides the ability to create, merge, split, and switch partitions. And DBAs will be very familiar with this for large tables, because what it does, it enables you to take large table, horizontally partition it into smaller chunks, and then from that you can choose to load, load data, archive data, and take a sliding window approach. So partition table management works really well for optimizing the loading of large tables. And when you combine that with the fact that we've got filtered indexes and filtered statistics, you can then target and align your indexing strategy with your partition management to enable piecemeal data reorganization itself. So to create a distributed table with partitions, you've got the standard create table statement with my table. You define your columns, your data types, and any nullability. And in the with clause, you'll define your distribution, whether it's hash or round robin. You'll define the index that you're using. In this instance, we're putting a clustered index on ship date. And then we are using a partition on the ship date column and range right for values. So we've got it for the 1st of January 1992, the 1st of February 1992, the 1st of March 1992, the 1st of April 1992, and so forth. That's all you need to do in Azure SQL Data Warehouse. In on-prem, you'd have to create a partition scheme and a partition function first before you can make use of the partition within the create table statement. Not the case in Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So that is something that you may come into conversations with customers where they'll be very used to taking that approach with on-prem. No need to do that on the Azure SQL Data Warehouse. So partition tables with clustered indexes could improve range queries if you do it correctly. But bear in mind, you may want to consider dropping a clustered index while doing an initial load, because if you have the index on, while you're doing initial load, not only does it have to load the data into it, it also has to reorganize the clustered index. In fact, a clustered index, the leaf level of that is actually the data itself. So in the takeaway from this is, you know, clustered indexes are brilliant for helping reading range queries, but if you're going to load data in, it will hinder data load time. So it's usually typical to drop the clustered index, do the load, then apply the clustered index after. It can also lead to page fragmentation as well, which can hinder performance. Partitioned table with a custom column store index will improve range queries, but compared to a cluster index, a custom column store index does have the lowest memory footprint because of that compression ratio that was talking about as well. Partition tabled with non-cluster indexes, avoid. If you have to, do it with a lot of testing. It could be used to potentially aid better concurrency because you'll create non-clustered indexes that are targeted to specific queries, but it's not guaranteed, which is why I was saying you should do a lot of testing. So it can cause a lot of random IOs. So last resort, only if you're doing it for better concurrency. Use partitioning for manageability. That's the whole point, maintaining data. So typically you'll specify partitioning on a date key or an integer surrogate equivalent. Typically it's the same as a clustered index key, so you can get that alignment. And then you use this ultimately to switch partitions out for fast deletes, into modify or have a historical slice, or in if the data being used is you want a separate copy of that for a separate environment such as dev or test. So if you're on the in-person event, you'd be doing a lab on this right now. Essentially, there are questions that I would ask attendees on my course to consider, and I would ask you to pause this now if you want to review it as a review of this video. A summary of what we've gone through. Well, we've gone through Azure SQL Data Warehouse databases, where we've talked about the edition being important, the max size being important, and the data warehouse units being important. We talked about distributed tables, the difference between hash and round robin, and when you would use one over the other. We talked about indexes and how you manage those indexes, the fact that we can use cluster column store indexes, clustered indexes. We could also use a heap, so we don't need indexes at all, and how that's useful for initial loads, and the fact that really you should be avoiding non-clustered indexes. We looked at statistics and how these are objects that sit on top of the indexes and provide information to the query optimization process about, you know, plans that can be used to get the data, and we finished off with working with partitions. More information can be found at learnanalytics.microsoft.com. If you go to the training tab in there, or the analytics training tab, you will be able to see a list of in-person training events provided by people from Microsoft or from our partners, and there is self-learning there. We've also got the Cortana Intelligence Gallery as well, so we've got a number of examples in manufacturing, banking, retail and healthcare. So I do recommend that, you know, you look at some of them. Some of those solutions do contain Azure SQL Data Warehouse as well. Thank you for your time today, and hopefully I will see you on the next video.